IVM.
A niche thing explores subcultures around us that make for great interests and hobbies. These range from topics like affordable art to exploring the world of coffee, hi-fi, sneakers, watches, vintage fashion, where the list goes on and on. It's a podcast with something for everyone. So let the conversation begin. On today's episode of A Niche Thing, I speak with Sandeep about suits. Well, it's something very close to me. And, you know, when you see someone in an ill-fitted suit, there are very few things as annoying as that. So we'll get into it right after these short messages. Well, on today's episode of A Niche Thing, I have a very, very impeccably dressed Sandeep of SS Home Saran Sandeep. And before we get into today's conversation around suits and power dressing and, you know, just decoding what makes one garment like this better than the other, I would actually love to know more about you and your journey and how you got here.
Yeah, sure. So Sarah and I started this company in 2012. But back a little before that, I was working with Hindustan Unilever. I was actually with Group M managing in Hindustan Unilever for their branded content and stuff like that. And I was unfortunately not very happy doing what I was doing. And Sarah was styling with GQ magazine. And she was also a freelance stylist and doing her own thing as well. And we were dating at the time. So for us to even take that plunge into starting a business was risky because there was no concrete assurance to as to what we were going to do post that. But I was planning on doing my master's in Paris, specializing in design and luxury in ESSEC. And just before I was going to go, Sarah and I had this conversation, I remember, where in my balcony. And I was like, you know, why don't we just start our own thing? Because no one was hiring me because I didn't have relevant experience. And Sarah was like, I don't know. Like, styling is not really my thing. I'm good at it, but yeah. I'm not really enjoying it to the extent that I would like to. So we said, you know, let's start our own thing. And we started the brand very organically. We started meeting clients in my hall, in my house. So we would meet like these, I think Brown Paper Bag had featured us in the beginning. And luckily from that, we got a couple of organic visits and they were like, you know, I'm interested to see what two young kids were doing. So when we got a great response, we were like, you know, let's research this more and find out more about suits and like how we can kind of make it a contemporary approach towards what people are used to. So we went to London, we went to Savile Row, we spent some time there. We met a couple of tailors, we met, kind of understood how those businesses work. We went to like really old school houses, we went to really contemporary versions of it. And then we were like, you know, let's try and maybe make an Indian version of this. So that's where we thought like it would have a mix of design and tailoring. So that's when we were like, let's try and come up with the word SS Home.
Yeah.
Because it has a cool ring to it. And plus it's our initials and all that stuff. So we started meeting people at my house. And then one thing led to another where one of our first clients who enjoyed it, called us to his place after that. He's like, you know, I'll host like this soiree in my house and we can call a couple of people and say, you know, let's try. And he was from the American consulate. So he called like 6 or 7 people from the consulate and they all placed orders. And that's how it kind of snowballed into something bigger every year. Then we moved to our first 120 square foot studio, which was maybe a little bigger than this, and 150 square feet. And then the next year, we went to a 300 square foot on Bandra, and then we went to 600, 900. Now we have a 3,000 square foot store.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And people always ask us, do you have investors? And do you like, I've just always been wary about my vision. So I'm not saying I would never take investors in the future. I know it's part of the game if I want to grow to that extent. But for me, I'm so clear cut with what I want to do with this brand. Even us rebranding from SS Home to Sarah and Sandeep was a specific need, right? We wanted to venture into power dressing for women's wear also, just the women's wear counterpart of what we were doing. And also relate to like people always ask us, why are you doing Indian and Western, you know? But for me, it is not, firstly, it's where I'm at. I'm in India. I've got to accept that. I've got to relate to the audiences that are coming to my store. And secondly, I wanted to ensure that I wanted to be known for bespoke clothing, like highly bespoke clothing, highly quality focused customization. And that's when I realized, okay, fine, you know, I don't have to stick to Indian or Western. I can just stick to my design sensibilities within each category. So now we design like cool bags and cool shoes and just with our aesthetic. And that's initially I couldn't wrap my head around that, but then I learned to really accept the fact that design was our forefront with the bespoke world, right?
So you didn't come from tailoring
No, my family has tailoring. Maybe like my grandmom and granddad had tailoring machines in their houses. But that's the extent to what I was exposed to before that. But I was always liked to dress well. I've always liked to be presentable. I know it makes a very impactful first impression, right? Yeah. And I know it really does a lot to your confidence. Because I've not really been a super confident person when I was in school. So for me to kind of make that transition to someone who can hold my own conversation and run my own business, I think it says a lot about like how you dress and how you kind of portray yourself.
You're wearing a very interesting ensemble right now.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about what you're wearing.
Sure. So obviously every single thing I'm wearing right now is made by my design house. But so this is like a cashmere jacket. What Sarah and I do generally is we go to Italy maybe approximately once a year. We go to this place called Biella, which is our favorite town in Italy. And we handpick a couple of fabrics from these mills, that directly from the mills, because we want it firstly to be really unique to our design studio. And secondly, we want it to be like of like the highest quality. So we've always realized that, and not to say anything wrong about Indian mills are great too. It's just that I feel that when it comes to worsted wool, I think Italian mills are just top notch. So we tend to do that on our trips there. And so this is made from like 100% worsted cashmere. You can feel the fabric if you want. It's super smooth, super comfortable. And people have this misconception saying you can't wear wool in Indian climates, but that's not true. That's completely, I think that's misinformation at its max. Because what happens is people related to woolens, which is what you wear in Kashmir and London and all that stuff. Yeah. But I'm talking about worsted wool, which is equally fine as, it's finer than cotton. You know, it's lighter than cotton. So people really need to understand that you can wear wool even in summers, just the right format and right styling. So yeah, that's it. I'm wearing a Jenny trouser. It's called like a high-waisted trouser. It's a pleated, double pleated trouser, which I like because I like comfort. I don't like anything too tight. So I just like to have something that's just falls cleanly. And I'm wearing one of my knits t-shirts. So what I've realized is over the years, people are kind of deviating from your suit and tie formation. They're going to a little more contemporary approach towards tailoring, right? So I wanted to incorporate that within like comfortable high stretch knit tees and have our own design sensibility to it. So even our shoes and our tees have all those kind of
pretty cool
detailing.
I didn't know you were doing tees as well.
I'm actually one of my best selling lines last year was tailored athleisure. So we're doing like zippers and bombers and like comfortable trousers, just to ensure that there is like anything bespoke tailored, I can bring that to any kind of category. So athleisure was a really cool category that we introduced last year.
It still is. It's amazing how popular that's becoming, right?
It really is.
And I think this succession's done a lot for it, Sunny. Everyone's talking about quiet luxury.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Quiet luxury is like the thing of the hour right now, right? Everyone is just like from going super brand logo focused, logo mania, to like the exact opposite. Yeah. I think that's what trends are about, right? That just completely flips it 180.
It's like now if you're seen wearing a Gucci with a big logo, it's like, is this your first
piece you've ever picked? Is this your first experience with Gucci? You new money.
But let's talk about suits.
Yeah.
What is a suit or what is a power suit? And how is a suit different from, let's say, the jackets, right? Different jackets, this, that. So decode a suit for me.
Sure. So again, for us, a suit is just all about making the right first impression. It's about making a powerful statement to whoever you're talking to or whoever you're in conversation with, because it just says a lot about how seriously you take yourself. I know the trend of people wearing suits is dying because they feel it to be too formal or just like claustrophobic. Some people have actually coined that as well. But I think it's more about you being confident and you portraying that confidence through what you're wearing. So that is, for me, what you call a quintessential power suit. What I'm seeing now is people breaking up the suit. So they're looking at like checkered jackets with contrast trousers, you know, wearing a suit differently like I am with a knit t-shirt. People are actually they're ditching the tie a lot. A lot of my corporate customers, like who I've been dealing with for over a decade now, have realized that, you know, I don't want to be seen with a tie. I just want to be known as someone relatable, someone who's still impeccably dressed, but someone who also is more open to the Gen Z audiences. So
Our team at IVM in the studio is all Gen Z right now. One more person. But
So from that front, I think people are seeing a lot of changes within what is considered to be formal and what's considered to be like a full suit. But again, I take pride in merging design and tailoring. So what I mean by that is there's a lot of design detailing that we incorporate, like zippers and like the right kind of buttons or like pick stitches within jackets, just from a design point of view. And tailoring, we always incorporate like a hand construction. So we always focus on full canvas suits, which is basically where there's no glue in the suit at all, no polyester. And that makes it a lot more breathable for the customer wearing it. And we've realized that true suit connoisseurs want those full canvas suits. They don't care about anything else.
Can we talk about that? Can we talk about the full canvas, half canvas situation?
Sure. So full canvas is basically where, as I said, there's no fusing in the suit. A half canvas suit, again, and it's generally bespoke when I say that, because most of the really high-end labels make only full canvas suits. You take a lot of pride in the fact that you make a full canvas suit, so you want to basically talk about construction as your main point, right? When you're talking to a customer. Half canvas suit generally is your second best bet, where it is you're following the construction of a canvas lapel, so you get the lapel roll, you get the comfort, you get that airiness on the lapels, but there is a bit of fusing on the body. So that's why they call it half canvas. And full fused is where the entire suit is glued together. So like the shell fabric and the lining and the interlining are glued, which kind of makes it for a very stiff wear. And you're going to see 99% of suits in India being fully fused.
And I think those are the times when your suit doesn't just fit like a
glove.
It's not like a glove or
And you know, like to a person who, to a layman, you can probably tell, you can't tell the difference, but someone who wears a good suit will know a good suit, right? So if you're trying to make an impression with the right kind of audiences, you better ensure that you're wearing a great suit and not just like a Zara or like, I don't want to take brand names actually, but like just like a, like a fast fashion suit.
I think the interesting thing for me is growing up, right? Tailoring was a very big part of, at least us growing up in India.
It was.
Everything was tailored.
Definitely.
Our uniforms were tailored.
Yeah.
I remember, so my father was in the army.
Yeah.
Their uniforms were, I think a lot of the tailors were anyway Savile Row or British trained.
Yeah.
And even for school and wherever we went, even in a place like Jodhpur, I remember they used to have 2-3 options of fabric companies, and they would give you, this is the
correct
number gray for this thing, this is the blue for your suit, for your jacket.
Yeah.
And everything was tailored no matter what age you were at, it was.
Yeah.
And that just went away. And we had that easily available.
I agree. And also I feel, unfortunately, there is some misconception with Indian tailoring internationally. So people kind of view Indian tailoring to be a little more like faster and quicker and cheaper. So then they kind of relate it to lesser quality, which I think my label is trying to change. You know, like people perceive us to be really expensive and they perceive us to be, because we take a longer period of time for a suit, they wonder, okay, why are you guys so expensive? But it's to do with the quality. It's not to do with trying to replicate something that's made in Savile Row in India. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we take a lot of attention to detail within even a classic suit, right, which is made for a corporate customer. There's a lot of attention to detail within the design, within the tailoring, with the fitting processes. So that's why you're paying a slightly premium for that. But people in India, the generic suit is expected to be made in like half a day, or one day, 24 hours, a lot like Vietnam or Thailand, you know? So, and you cannot be getting a full canvas suit in half a day or in 24 hours. It's just impossible because it's all hand done. Everything is hand stitched. Like for our full canvas suits, you use Bemberg lining, which is like a fully breathable lining that comes from Japan, you know, like things like that, that are very well integrated in the whole canvas suit processes. And like a layman would be like, I just want a suit, you know? So then they'd be like, no, I'm getting it for like this X price in like 2 days. I'm just like, that's not our product, you know? So it's hard to explain that to most of the audiences who expect Indian tailoring to be cheap.
Also, what are these emergencies that the suit has to be made in 1 day or 2 days?
I have no clue.
Like what happens?
And I think that's to do with poor planning, because people come for like quick weddings and they have nothing to wear and they just probably do that. Or even if it's like a big conference coming up and then like, you know, I need a jacket or I need a suit or I need a trouser.
So one is your construction
yes.
of your jacket that will define
correct.
The price points and the quality.
Correct.
The other, I'm assuming, would be fabric.
Yes, fabric plays a very important role. We also tend to recommend people to only use, we're one of the only few brands that use natural fibers for our fabrics. So we use a lot of worsted wools, we use a lot of pure like Egyptian cottons, we use linen, you know, basically 100% natural fibers. And that has kind of helped us convince a customer that, you know, like you're paying for quality, you're not necessarily paying for polyester fused kind of garments. So, and as if you see currently, many of the trends that are the suits that are slightly economically priced are primarily going to be 100% polyester or a very high polyester blend. So we're looking at trying to change that perception, saying polyester is not good for you. You know, especially for a suit, you're not going to feel airy or light or feel comfortable in what you're wearing.
I'm sure it'll be marketed as that. It'll keep you 1 degree cooler than...
Exactly, yes. Outside. And you know, you get some really cool polyester fabrics where in terms of athleisure and stuff like that. But that's for that category. Yeah. It's not meant for your suits, you know. So I think from that front, we're trying to get people to realize, okay, fine, worsted wool is the way to go for suits.
You said this a couple of times. Yeah. What is worsted wool?
So worsted wool is basically, it's basically a wool that goes through a lot of processes for development, and it's a little extensive to explain here, but in terms of a fiber, it is made out of wool, merino wool, which comes from Australia. And it's generally processed in Europe somewhere, if it's a high quality. Indian mills are now stepping up to that challenge and really producing some great worsted wools as well. But the difference with that and woolens is woolens are thicker fibers and they're meant for warmer climates and they're meant for like really chilly temperatures, which can actually keep you warm. The thing with worsted wool is it acts as an insulator. So it keeps you cool in the summer and keeps you warm in the winter. So that's how it kind of has a great play on different types of fabrics to use within Bombay.
Also talk about the different styles of just the jackets, right? What's the difference between a sports jacket and a blazer and a suit jacket? Like,
so, I mean, if you get technical with that, basically a suit jacket is just a jacket that's made from just the jacket portion of the suit. Right, so you can wear it with a trouser or a chino or something like that, just reusing that jacket as is. Generally, a blazer is when, in again technical terms, is when you have like these metal buttons on the blazer, and they're used as there's certain details of a blazer that kind of you can use it as again solid fabric, but you have like contrast gold buttons or contrast like metal buttons to work with. And sports coats are like generally checker jackets or meant for like sporting activities or polos or that kind of stuff. And you have some sports jackets with like patch pockets and, you know, like patches and stuff just to make it like a little more stylized. But we try to kind of stay away from that categorization now because people are like, you know, isn't this a sports jacket? Isn't this a tuxedo jacket? Isn't this a suit jacket? I was like, you know what? Just work according to the utility that you need. And we'll build your wardrobe from there. The thing is, now since people are not wearing full suits anymore, right? They're looking and playing mix and match with trousers and combinations and stuff. So people prefer to maybe just get one classic suit and then have like 5 trousers made and 5 jackets made that mix and match between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to get a little more into detail about that, I think the classic suit that someone generally picks, if you're a first timer and you don't know what to wear, you generally pick like a classic navy suit or a classic charcoal gray suit because that's multi-utility. You can use it for a business occasion. You can use it for a wedding. You can break it up and you just get the max utility out of that. Then post that, you can build your suits. People generally think in India, oh, your first suit is a black suit.
I've made that mistake, man. That's the worst thing to do.
Yeah, that is the worst thing. You don't get any utility out of it.
Yeah,
you just look like you're dressing for a funeral.
Yeah. Or they're going to ask you to get your drink or something.
Oh, correct. Yes. Or Secret Service. Yes.
Yeah. I've been there. I got a really nice all black double-breasted suit stitched.
But was that your first suit?
Wasn't my first suit.
Then it's fine.
No, but you know, that time when you're redoing your wardrobe and you realize your earlier suits are crap.
Right.
And then I started with that, which was a mistake. Yeah. I should have done a gray or a
navy. Top is navy and gray. Then if you are going to like your secondary suits, then you go to your light gray, you go to your black, you go to your beige, like you want a day jacket, you know? So you got options like that. I'm wearing like a cool Glen Check, which is something that's interesting as well.
So let's just try and close on the kind of quintessential suits or jackets you would have.
Yeah.
Dark gray, blue.
Navy blue.
Yeah.
Your you say blue is like 10,000 blues.
Yeah.
So you generally navy blue is the go-to fabric because I have a lot of high-end corporates and financial guys come to me, right? So I know that they need to wear like a navy suit on a regular basis. So even if it's wearing it with a plain white shirt, pink, some pastel shade, they mix and match the shirts but not the classic suit. It's deemed appropriate in that kind of work environment.
I just end up throwing my navy blue double-breasted jacket on top of anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because jeans, it goes with shirt, anything.
It just goes with anything,
I agree.
You just go from super casual to decently and presentable.
I'm sure you know a lot of people are wearing denims with jackets,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what I'll end up doing a lot.
Yeah, so it's something that shows your kind of formal, but you're also staying true to your character.
Yeah. Yeah. Or always an easy thing
exactly.
to do. Let's touch a little bit upon shirts also. So sure. You've got a gray and navy blue suit. What would be your first three or five shirts?
See, obviously, you have to have your classic whites. That is your staple wardrobe. And I would say multiple whites because you never know with issues with maintenance or dry cleaning or stains, etc. But your classic whites are there. Then you go to your really light pastels. You go to your pink. You go to your really, really like pista green, mint green. You go to your, I would say maybe like even a peach. But besides that, you go to the night variation, which is like a navy shirt, because navy goes really well with grays. So navy and gray looks well, good. You can go for a classic black for like a really night appropriate function. And then you build from that. Then you can go into your checks, into your pinstripes, into your unique patterns that you can actually experiment with to kind of show more about your personality.
Also like small detailings, right? Like when your lining is something completely different.
Yeah, of the jacket.
Which people don't expect.
That's the thing. Now, a couple of things with bespoke suits, you look at things like that, right? Yeah. You look at your button that you're looking at. You're looking at the lining, interlining of the jacket. You're looking at the detailing inside the jacket. You're looking at even just finer details about how many pockets you have, you know, like what kind of pocket square you use. Things like that make a difference in like the bespoke styling of it all. And it goes the same with shirts. People look at doing initials on, you know, like calf or at the bottom hem. So it's very individualistic, but I see a lot of customization from that front as well.
So I think from a men's standpoint, right? We don't have that much to play
around
with.
There's nothing.
So these kind of things really.
This is our kind of
our
domain.
Us having some fun.
Yeah. So and we've realized that women clients are so different from male clients because men are basically looking for convenience. You know, they're looking for something that I'm talking about the service point of view, not the product point of view. They're looking for something that basically aids them when they need it, right? So whoever we've been dealing with, whether it's corporate or weddings or whatever, they're like they leave it completely to us. They're like, you do what you do, but just make me look good. So that's what they want, right? That's what majority of the men want. But women are more into the whole process and, you know, want to get into a little more into the fabric, a little more into the design detailing. So we've seen that kind of in terms of the difference, but that's not to say we have male clients that don't care. We have a lot of clients that are super particular about fiber and fabric and supers and all that stuff. But again, it's like, I would say 50-50 in male, but women, it's majority of them that do that.
Fair. We'll take a short little break. And when we come back, I want to talk about a bunch of more things, including some fashion faux pas with suits that really need to stop.
Yeah, sure. Done.
Welcome back to A Niche Thing. I'm with Sandeep. We're talking about suits and power dressing. One thing we were discussing right now during the break was your lapel.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about lapel styles and how broader ones are perhaps making a comeback.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've always liked broader lapels because I feel personally that it makes a more impactful statement. It tells you a lot about the person wearing it, the confidence related to it. So I always recommend my customers or my clients to wear larger lapels. That's, as I was telling you earlier as well, that a lot of the clients who are even uninformed right now basically come to us saying, you know, I want larger lapels because they're seeing it on celebrities and they're seeing these like prolific people wearing these power lapels. And that's to say, because like Tom Ford had done this a decade ago, I would say. And he's really kind of been the pioneer in that field. But like, as opposed to like English bespoke suits, which are generally smaller lapels, and Italian suits, which are slightly larger lapels. So you get all kinds of customers, but I prefer someone wearing a larger lapel because it just makes a more impactful statement.
And what about the cut over here? Like,
yeah, so you get really unique types of lapels. The core three categories that people generally go for is peak lapel, which is what I'm wearing right now. It has like an accent over here. You get a notch, which has a break over here, which is most of suits in India.
Yeah.
anywhere in the world, actually. People go for a classic notch no matter what because they think of it as the most multi-utility format. And the third one is a shawl, which is meant for more like tuxedos and dinner jackets and stuff like that. So you'll see it more on that category.
And what is that cut there for?
So this is called basically a lapel hole. It's called a Milanese buttonhole, actually. And it's made out of Milanese thread. And it's a specific kind of construction done by hand. Takes a lot of time to do. But there are certain peculiarities about this that people actually look at to see about whether it's actually done by hand and it's a specific kind of silky thread that's used for it. So things like that make the entire...
So it's one of those suit nerdy things.
Yeah, very nerdy. In fact, it's kind of embarrassing to talk about right now because I'm so particular about all these small things. I use Crozo or Horn buttons for my suits. I'm very particular about that because I don't use plastic in any of my suits.
So what happens? You go to a party, you see someone's suit, then you look at
dissect
their...
Dissect it. Yeah, yeah. So in my head, I never...
That's not a handmade hole or something.
In my head, I'll never be like an ass or in there and just say something. But I definitely think it. So I know I can only because I've had 12 years of experience in this field, man. I'm just immediately dissecting construction and design and stuff.
Now that you also have women's wear, right? Mm. What is the trend or what's the thing you're seeing there? Are people wearing more suits?
So again, for women, our category of women's wear is not your cliched women's wear. It's more, again, power dressing, a little more masculine in terms of an aesthetic. We have lapels on most of our garments. We've made lehengas with lapels, so that kind of Indo-fusion formats of garments. Just to kind of talk about how we want the Saran Sandhi woman to be kind of portrayed. And we've realized that it's a smaller subset of audiences for sure, but they're so sure and self-assured about what they want that they'd even scout us down from all over India or even the world and come in, fly down, get something specific that we've designed and custom make it for them. And we've realized in terms of brides also who bought our stuff, very far and few in comparison to the grooms, but in terms of just the aesthetic, they're so, so crystal clear with what they want. And it's kind of a refreshing change, to be honest, because women are generally, as you know, they're very particular about small things. And when they come in saying, I want this color, I want this style, I want this design, just from the inner bespoke process, it's music to our ears.
Last time we met, you were wearing a safari jacket.
Yeah.
And again, the first impression for me when I think of a safari suit is bureaucrats in a government office or something.
Yeah, but it didn't look like that, right?
It didn't look like that at all. So tell me more about that. Tell me about the whole safari jacket phenomena.
So, what we've realized over the as I was telling you earlier as well, that people are looking at alternatives to suits, right? They're not really looking at a quintessential suit as your everyday go-to wardrobe or something that's even relatable as comfort, right? They think of it as stuffy and stuff like that. So what we are trying to do is present alternatives to a classic business jacket or a classic formal jacket. And when we were looking at ideas, we just the safari suit came to mind because it's quite deep-rooted in Indian tradition also. They have very utilitarian motives for a safari suit as well. But what we decided to do is make it a little more contemporary to add a design aesthetic to it and make it seem like someone is wearing a cool power safari just for a regular evening. And it does make an impression. People 7 to 10 people ask me about my safari, including you, about my safari suit and the detail behind it, the lapel, the collar.
There's belts on. Yeah,
that one had a belt for sure. And again, I've realized it's such a cool alternative because it's a lot more comfortable than a jacket because it's the movement and all that stuff. You can style it open, you can style it closed. There's so many ways of doing that right. And it's the same fabric as a suit. So you get that formality, you get that touch of seriousness from that, but not as formatted as you would with the jacket, suit jacket.
Let's talk about some suit faux pas.
Yeah.
Things that really need to stop.
You know what? See, I've realized that over a period of time that suit faux pas are just something that you feel individually. I don't think it's something that works across the board because what I may think is cool, you may think is not, right? So I don't want to generalize that term. But according to me, again, I'm just stating that, I feel mismatched, even with I'm just talking about from a classic formal suit perspective, mismatched shirt. Shirt, belt, and shoes.
But tell me, what would that mismatch be?
So someone wearing a black shoe with a brown belt and then a contrast shirt, that just really doesn't work for me. also, you have to play it smart with a suit, because people, whether it's a specific kind of trend of print or specific, like paisleys for some for a period of time were considered really cool, and now they're considered outdated. Now they're gonna, like, you know, it's gonna, like, a whole cycle that you go through. So adding that to your wardrobe also plays a big role in making it view as something that's updated or outdated. So I think that just color combinations is where I have that issue. And I think more importantly, like with a suit, the only thing is a fit. So if you screw that up, you're not going to look good no matter what, right? And I'm not saying, like, you know, like as I was telling you about athleisure and like these more anti-fit jackets are coming into play, but it should look like a stylized anti-fit. It can't look like an ill-fitted jacket. Yeah. So there's a fine line between that as well.
But still, you have to give me more faux pas though, because I want to talk about, like, just bad combinations, man.
Yeah, like
bad color combinations, bad color shoe matching, socks.
So see, now even like sneakers and suits can look really cool, but done with the wrong sneakers is just completely, it just looks off, yeah. Right? And that's something that people are really trying to kind of implement in their suiting wardrobes right now, because even just yesterday, one of these big corporates that I was dealing with, he was telling me, he's like, you know, I want to wear like sneakers with my suit. I was like, you can, but just wear the right color and the right format. You don't want to wear something super clunky where it looks really off on the hem, or you don't want to wear something that just doesn't make an impact. So you want to kind of find that balance between the two. I'm currently in the process of designing sneakers for our label.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But nice. Basically like a little more cleaner format sneakers, because we are technically more about the whole quiet luxury format as opposed to Logomania that has been the trend for years right now. So it was kind of hard for us during that time, because people are like, you know, but I want to wear like a LV belt with your suit. I want to so that kind of doesn't work in our mind, because for me, my customer just wants to look super sharp and super powerful. That's about it. They don't really need to be ostentatious about it, you know? So I think from that front, we try and make them mix and match with sneakers that are really more minimal and a little more interesting to look at as a silhouette, not super clunky and chunky. And for a suit, and for, like, I would say for color combinations, you know, you get a lot of people wearing screwing up brown as a color, because it can look really good.
You have two different shades of brown.
Yeah, I have two different shades of brown. I have two different checks, but I'm making it work because it's the shade, it's the kind of combination that you're wearing it with. So I think from that front, people need to be a little more educated about, like, we have this thing called the color wheel in our studio, where we kind of show a client what kind of matches with, like, there's a complementary color, a contrasting color, you know. And we also have, like, we're developing this thing where you can, it's for fittings and trials, where you can kind of see what color suits you. You know, like, some colors live in tone up and some people just, like, drown it down. So things like that we want to implement within the whole bespoke suiting process. So just to avoid faux pas.
Yeah. Also, tell me, how was the Dior experience?
Oh, that was one of our favorite experiences, because firstly, just being part of iconic project like that is just historic for us, at least in our...
Will you just tell us exactly how what transpired?
So, obviously with Dior, everyone knew about the show that they were doing in India at the Taj, not at the Gateway of India, sorry. And Taj was where they were hosting most of their clients. So it was something that's been in the planning for months, and they had contacted us directly from, the Paris team had contacted us directly. Just to be a part of it was just, firstly, an alarming call. We're so happy to get that call. And secondly, we wanted to kind of know more about what the project was, because we know the fact that Chanakya was the embroidery house that they were working with. And they called us and said, look, we're looking at, obviously they are a design house in themselves, and they were looking at doing something that just as more as a support, Indian support team, right? So they wanted our craftsmanship, our tailors, our masters, our consultants, just from a representation point of view also. So we was working with them on fittings for all 99 models, as well as over 70 VIPs. So across the world, they were flown in, Indian and international. And just working at a project that scale was something that me and my team really enjoyed. It's like a once in a lifetime thing, I would think. We worked on some really cool projects before. We dressed the NBA Sacramento Kings when
amazing.
They came. Yeah, okay. When we came down. So we had like around 70 people to dress in our contemporary Indian wear.
How big are their suits?
They were wearing Sherwanis and stuff. So they were wearing our contemporary Sherwanis, and they were like 7'4" and 7'2". And so we flew to California for the fittings over there. So projects like that have always been happening with us. As you know, we're under the radar. We're not really screaming about it, which I think whenever people come meet us, they're like, why aren't you talking about it more? You know, it's a very good marketing tool for you. But I just feel for us, our clients appreciate that. They want us to have like that personal connect with them. So even like just having been part of this huge project last month was just a big deal for us.
Also, tell me, getting a really good bespoke suit made, what kind of prices are we looking at? Prices and timelines, actually.
So again, as I told you, a bespoke suit starts at around $1,95,000 to $1,00,000. I know it's a little pricier than most of the options in bespoke options over here, but we take pride in that. And what I mean by that is we don't skimp on anything, whether it's service, quality, finish, design, whatever it is. And we always encourage a customer to take at least 45 days from start to finish. Just give us our time. It will give you the best product. You know, and we've realized that even with our design projects with uniforms, or we do a lot of projects like that for a lot of these labels and brands all over India and globally. But we still ask for the same timeline because we're so particular about fittings, right? We've taken pride in the fact that we do take two fittings. It's some clients be like, dude, why are you making us do this, right? Like, but it's not that. It's to ensure that the final product is the most impeccable version of it. So so it's like a 45-day timeline that we'd recommend. But we do manage to turn around things with 30 days as well, depending on the number of fittings.
That first fitting you do is that when threads are all over the place.
Yeah.
And as a client, I have no clue what you're looking at.
Yeah. So
I can't figure anything out.
So there, you're trying to get a feel of how a customer, how he feels in that fabric. And, you know, you can take his opinion as well, because you want the wearer to be super comfortable. His notion of what a good fitting suit may be different from what we deem as a good fitting suit. So it's kind of working in synergy with the client to achieve that fit. But I can make any construction change in terms of the fit, whether it's tapering, length, etc. So it's the easiest form to kind of make those adjustments. And then the second fitting is more of a finished look where you help with the styling and the micro adjustments post that.
See, a good suit has to be, you have to be like James Bond, right? If he can fight crime and he can run and save his life and be shooting people wearing a suit.
That's the dream.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Well, Sandeep, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I enjoyed this, actually. I'm glad I took a trip down memory lane with you, because I've not spoken about this in a while.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think I've ever had a guest on the show that's so oppositely dressed to me right now.
That's the whole point of doing this. I think it's contrasting personalities also.
Also, let me know your handles, personal handle, your official handle. How can people find you?
Sure. So we are very accessible on Instagram and also on the phone. But you can always reach out to us on @SSOMME, which is what our initial brand name was, but because we're verified and we can't change the brand, the heading, that's one of the reasons we reach us there. And this, my personal Instagram is SandeepMXG. I'm very interactive with whoever messages me because I try to kind of have a direct approach to all my customers, so it helps definitely.
Yeah, that's great to know. But thanks, man. I will see you soon.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
If you like this episode, do write to me on social media. My handle is Anish B on Twitter and Instagram. Tune in next Tuesday for yet another fun episode of Anish Thing on the IVM Podcast app and all major podcast platforms.